Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to this week's Weekly D. And today I have the lovely Justine McLucas on with me. Justine is an old friend that I've been friends with for years and years and years. She's one of my first pole teachers that I had back in the day when I started pole dancing. And we talk about an array of different subjects today, but I am going to give a trigger warning that we do talk today about pregnancy and pregnancy loss. So if this is something that you think is going to be an issue for you to listen to, please do go and check out all of the other awesome episodes that I have on this podcast. But if you're good to go, let's get started. This is the Weekly D, because honey, if you ain't getting your D on the daily, you better at least be getting it once on the weekly.
If you're not getting any and you want some tea, then come and join Dan up on the Weekly D.
Hey, Justine, thank you for joining me.
Hello, thanks for having me.
This is our round two, because we had a few technical issues last time, didn't we? But let's hope we have better luck this time with some Wi-Fi at the studio. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I just want to say, we won't talk about it because I don't want to set you off, but I just want to say sorry for your loss, little Chili.
Thank
if anyone's
you.
Wondering, Chili is a dog. It's not a person, but still,
no.
Dogs are like our children, aren't they?
Yeah, then she is definitely my baby. I know you want to talk about this later today, actually. So I went on a big journey to try and have a baby, but I couldn't. So Chili really is my baby, and she passed away from congenital heart failure last week at 14.
Oh, was that what it was? It was heart failure.
Yeah, yeah. So, she's 14.
For yep. a chihuahua, right? 14 is pretty decent.
Pretty
right?
good, yeah. I still was hoping that she would hit the world record and be like the oldest chihuahua to ever live and live to like 25 or something. But no, she didn't. Yeah. She was like the first pole pet as well, you know, like doing photos of her with pole, you know, sitting on me and stuff. She was such
right.
a, yeah, and lived in the pole studio and grew up with all the pole girls, so, and boys.
And Chili went from Australia to London, London to Australia, right? You didn't get her in London, did you?
No, I got her here. So she
you
was born in Surrey. Yeah, she is an English baby. She, yeah, and then I had to fly her to Australia when I moved back there in 2016, when I fled the country. As you think
right.
that I did.
Right, I see. Okay. Oh, so she only had to do the flight once.
Just once, yeah, which was stressful enough because it's like a 24-hour flight. And for a little tiny dog, I was stressed the whole time. But she managed.
But she's not allowed to be in the section with you, is she? She has to be in the hull.
No, she had to go on her own flight as well. It's a certain flight and she's got to go in the hull and she has to go into quarantine for 10 days. It's horrible.
Oh,
it's very scary for a little dog. But now she's gone completely.
Oh,
and I'm
sad.
Not there. That was the worst bit. Like, I'm not there. I wasn't there to be with her for her last moments. We're so going off on another tangent
now.
But if we could, I could talk about Chili for hours.
But do you know what, for me, like, I don't ever plan on having children, and like for me, like, my dogs are my children, so like,
yeah, exactly.
I know it's not the same.
I'm coming to steal one of your babies now. I've decided you're going to share them.
Fucking honestly please take one.
Yeah, you've got enough fluff there. I think you can share.
I've got too much. Literally, I'm wearing a black top and I can see hair all over it. It's just like,
that's what
my
I missed it. I missed the fur all over me.
I know. Sorry, yeah, we did kind of go a little bit off track there.
Yes.
But yeah, sorry for your loss. But
Thank you.
Wanted you to just, before we get started and go into all the topics I want to talk about with you today, I just wanted you to give like an intro, really, just to who you are, what you do, just for anyone who's listening, maybe hasn't been following you for very long. So
because I'm old and no one knows who I am now.
give us a bio.
Disappeared. Okay, well, I started pole actually in London in like 2006 or 2007. I think it was 2007. So I was one of the OGs, I guess, in London, and decided to set up a studio, like a standalone studio, one of the first standalone studios in about 2010, January 2010, which was a colder pole in my little flat in Earls Court with three normal, like, ex-pole actual sets, like the home sets. I don't think I even used all the extensions out of it. It was that that tiny. I was an ex-pole girl back in the day. And then what else did I do? I went on So You Think You Can Dance and tried to make pole a little bit more, I don't know, mainstream, I guess. So I've tried to promote pole a little bit, make it a bit bigger and expand with my studios. We've got two franchises in the US now, and my pole camps, which run in Thailand and the Gold Coast. So that's my business, I guess, and that's me in a nutshell.
And how did a cold to pole, where did the, so a cold to pole, there's some link to ballet there, because you've got a ballet background.
Oh, yeah. Yes, so I was a ballet dancer back in the day. I actually went to the Hamburg Ballet like when I was a teenager, and my ballet school before that was called École Classique. So that's where I got the name for it from. I don't actually speak French. So all these people that come up to me and just start rambling at me in French, I'm like, oh no, sorry, I don't actually speak French. I just chose it for the name. Plus it rhymes, so it's fun.
I'm just a fraud. It's literally just a name.
A fraud, yeah. I mean, I did high school French, so I can, you know, say like, on y va, and that's about it.
So what year did a cold pole start?
It was January 2010 I started in Earls Court, and then I expanded to have a bigger studio in Fulham, which I think you came to the opening of the one in Fulham.
That was the one where there was the little upstairs waiting area.
Yeah, the little mezzanine area upstairs, and we put in RSJs and some big poles and stuff. And then I also had one in London Bridge, so then I had the two, and then I moved those in 2012 to Camden in North London, into that Muse building, and then ended up staying there for years and years and years. And I fled the country in 2016.
Yeah.
And then actually sold that studio in 2019, because it's very hard to run a studio. It's hard enough to run a studio on your own, I'm sure. You know that. And then to try and do it from a different country.
But my this is the thing. People always say to me, like, you know that. And I'm like, well, I know that. And I don't even run what I consider like a proper studio. I mean, mine's a small space within a big building that I just rent.
Yeah.
And it's so easy. I have barely any commitment with it. Whereas with like these proper spaces, I take my hats off to you, because it's such a commitment. Like,
definitely hard work. Yeah. Second time round, I'm glad I'm doing it with someone else, like the studio. So École de Pole is my brand, and I have all these bits and pieces all over the place. But the studio in London this time, I'm setting it up with a business partner, which, thank God, because it's just, like, it's too hard to do on your own if you've got other things going on in your life, especially. So I have Trevor Schoonrad, who I think you've probably met years and years ago as well. Yeah, Trevor and me are we're like the grandma and grandpa of pole now, I think. Trevor, I just called you a grandpa, but just
Trevor stopped doing pole for a little while, because when you left, I felt like he kind of wasn't doing it as much. He went a bit quiet. He started doing,
Trevor's a professional ballet dancer as well, and has danced with like the ballet companies and operas and stuff all over the place. So he's continued to do ballet and pole pretty much the whole time, like between here and Denmark and South Africa, and but he's based in London again, so doing it together.
Yeah, that's awesome. How does it feel? Great. Have you ever had a business partner before? What's that experience like so far for you?
Actually, I do have a business partner for my Thailand camps. Jenny, Jenny Leibert. So Jenny has taught me to play nice with others, because generally I like to do everything myself and be a bit of a control.
Because you're quite an independent woman, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I
everything done my way.
Right, exactly. So you just, the years, you've just,
I think I've mellowed in my old age. And I think I also appreciate, like, when other people can help. Because you cannot do everything yourself. Like, it's nice to think that you can, but actually it's much better. And you get better ideas when other people suggest things. And you think, I would never have thought of that. Like, you know, I like to think that I think of everything, but you know, it's really good to have other people help you sometimes. So allowing people to help that's been a big learning curve for me. And Thailand works brilliantly with me and Jenny and Masha, whose family owns the resort that we use in Phuket. It's absolutely stunning. I'm sure you can vouch for that. It's just such a beautiful location.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I don't want to listen. I've known you for a long time and I don't want to give you a big head, but it is honestly one of the best camps I've been to, which is why I'm coming again this year. And I just, fucking cool location. Like, that hotel is just insane. Awesome. Like, but not insane, like, as in it's like a grand, like, hip, because I'm going to a pole camp actually this week, which is in this amazing Hilton Hotel in Croatia.
Ooh, fancy.
And it's stunning, but it's different. Different vibe. It's very modern. It's brand new. The rooms are all modern and all this. This is kind of like, it's not even a big hotel, really, is it? I mean, it's quite small in terms of the actual size of the hotel, but it's
the Ayara. It's very... So the Ayara, it's because it's like in the jungle, kind of like on the cliff side. So they're all little villas with the rooms and stuff. So they're not like, And it just feels like you're in your own little villa, even though it's actually a hotel room. And then the villas are on the top. And because there's the trees and the jungly bits all in between, it feels really like secluded and, you know, that you're on a, on your own private island, even though it's Phuket, which is an island, but still, it feels like you're in this tiny little exclusive spot, you know.
I remember it was like so surreal because me and Ali in the evening, like, we would like go back to our like little villa and like we were sitting out on like the balcony in the evening and just like sat there listening to like all the like the crickets and the frogs and all these like making these noises.
Yeah,
just, like,
it's so nice.
Relaxing, like, oh my god, this is just so peaceful. And we're just doing obviously normal mundane admin for our studios or whatever, and we're just like, this is just lifestyle.
It's different when you get to do it with that kind of like scenery around you, absolutely, which 100%. Is why I run the instructor camp there as well, because it's nice to be able to study in that environment. Like, yeah, I run the obviously the pole camps, which you're coming to, but I always do a week of instructor training as well the week before. So it's a lot of studying, but it's so nice to do it by the pool in that beautiful resort and with the breakfast. The breakfast is the best bit. It's like unlimited, eat whatever you want from the buffet. There's Thai food, there's like an a la carte menu, and then there's champagne if you want champagne every morning. Obviously we don't condone champagne and then class, but hey, you're on holiday.
But one's not gonna kill you. I mean,
it's not gonna kill you.
Yeah,
unless you're doing Beth, unless you're doing Beth's workshop, as you know. So
yeah,
although Beth loves to have a beer and then teach Fonji. Sorry, Beth. Get that.
Yeah, I'm honestly so scared for that. I think she's gonna kill us. But for, I've actually got a workshop with her before I come to that camp as well. Actually, she's gonna be in the UK, so I'm going to that one in London, and then I'll be seeing her obviously at your camp.
Cool.
That'll be
really you get a little fun. Test. You know how she works.
How long have you been doing the instructor training for? How did you get into that?
So I started my instructor training in-house when I had my London Bridge studio, and I hired like Anna De Cavallio, and I trained up Alexandra Carolina. She was actually one of my first students in my Earls Court studio way back in like 2010. So she started with us, and I trained her up to be an instructor as well. It was just an in-house one. And then I decided to get it like accredited through all the different bodies in America and Australia and the PDC here in like 2019. It took a while to get there because I have so many things going on, but it's been going for a few years now, and it's online as well as the camps and face-to-face courses. I love doing that. I just love I love all the technical stuff and all the anatomy and like breaking things down. So that's the stuff I really like. And I like writing things. So I got to write a big manual and, you know, about stuff.
How many of the instructor trainings do you run per year? Is it just like a couple or?
It depends. So I've got a few, like the girls that own the Cleveland studio in Ohio in the US, they probably run about four a year, I'd say, between three and five at least. So like, yeah, it depends how many they do. So they do theirs, and then I probably do maybe two or three just weekend ones, and then my two camps. So I do which is the full series, the beginner, intermediate and advanced, in the Gold Coast in February and Phuket in November, December each year.
Is the Cleveland one the one that Meg the Supernova works at?
Yes, Meg the Supernova. Oh, and she's actually going to be one of the master trainers in Phuket this year in December. She'll be there. She was going to stay for week one, so you'll get to meet her.
Oh, she's going to be at week one?
Yeah. She's staying.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
You get to meet.
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, because I love her stuff. Do you know what? I really like Meg as well, because Meg is so much like me. I consider myself a
Oh my god, you two just like on pole walls, whenever there's something, I'm like, I bet you Meg has written a comment on this, and I'm like, yep.
Right. Meg strikes me as do you know what? I'm going to mess you up when I get her on this podcast, actually. But
yes!
Meg strikes me as the type of person that is just like zero tolerance to bullshit. And I just love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's so smart and she's so on it. And I just love her to bits because, yeah, she will not put up with bullshit, basically.
Is it her studio?
Great. She's great. Yeah, so her and Rachel Yakabuchi, they own it together.
Right.
And they've, you know, licensed the Ecole de Pole brand and they do the instructor training in America for me.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. They're a great bunch of women to work with.
So we're going to get a subject out of the way because I remember when we last tried recording this, we talked about it and we just brushed on it, but it's just to more as a clarification, because when you left London, obviously I know now because we'd spoken about it in Thailand, because when you originally left, everyone was kind of like, oh, why has she left? Like, what's happened kind of thing. And there was this whole rumor that there was like, you were running away from the VAT man kind of thing.
So yes, I was fleeing the country.
So let's just use this opportunity. So I remember you explained last time, so I'm going to get you to explain it again. But yeah, tell us why you left.
So clean slate. I will come clean. I did not flee the country. And if I was going to flee the country, I would not be fleeing to Australia because it's got an extradition, like, you know, with the UK. So it would be the stupidest place to go to. I'd go to Panama or something. So I didn't. I did have a VAT thing happen, but it was, I don't know, there was a whole lot of things happening then that HMRC were trying to find businesses that they could pick on and go, oh, you're not registered to VAT and you should be. There was like a belly dancing teacher that got picked up on it before me. All these different types of like teaching, education type, fitness and dance type things that were a bit of in a grey area. And my accountant actually said, oh, your education, because I do instructor courses and I do adult, you know, teaching and fitness and all this type of stuff. So they actually told me I was exempt from registering for VAT. So we went along with that. And then when I got audited and everything, HMRC said, no, you don't meet the criteria. So there was a whole lot of blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we fixed it. We sorted it out. My accountant basically had to pay most of the bill because they gave me the wrong advice. So it wasn't even my fault. Right. That's pretty much it. But that's not why I left the country.
Yeah. So why did you leave the country? Did you?
Well, I mean, the stress of that, I think, did add to some of the stress that I was having. Like I said earlier, running a studio on your own, you know, I was like 28 or something when I opened my studio. And there was no like, there was no one to, you know, model it off. I had to make it up as I went along. There was no pole studios already there. So I sort of put my ballet creative hat and my business background, because I was an investment banker for a little bit, I worked in finance for an investment bank. So I put all of those things together to make this business, but there wasn't a model or anything to go off. So I kind of had to make it up as I go along. It's very stressful. Very stressful. So I was getting stressed after like probably 8 years of doing that. And then this VAT stuff came along. That was extremely stressful and hard on the business as well. And then I had a very dramatic relationship that was causing me pain and heartache, more pain. It's just a pain in the ass. you know who that is. Yeah, he was part of the pole community. So I decided that it was also very cold in London and I'd had enough. I was getting old. I needed warmth. My parents were getting old. So I thought, I'm going to go to Australia and get warm and, just live out my life there in the sun. And then that drama person followed me to Australia and created more drama for me in Australia. They're still there, actually. So I've now gone back here. No, I had a big 7 years, it was, back in Australia. But I guess I thought I was going to settle down a little bit more there. You know, I'd sold the studio in 2019 in London, so I was kind of just doing the stuff in Australia. I always wanted to keep the one in London, because I do love London and I wanted to be able to come back and forth. But that just sort of didn't happen at that point. And then we had the pandemic. So, you know, me and Trevor actually wanted to do this before the pandemic happened. So we were like, oh, no, okay, well, we'll leave that. Didn't happen. And then I was going to have a baby and get all, you know, be an adult, join the rest of society and what you're supposed to do, apparently, and, you know, have a baby. But that didn't work out for me. So I went, well, I'm just going to have my original baby, which was a Coldepole in London, and have a more exciting life and come back. Yeah.
And then you've been back now for how long?
So I came back in June. I'm just staying for 4 months this time to set up the business, sort of suss out what's happening, because it was all a bit of a whirlwind. We were trying to find a venue to put it in, which we were going to go like Fulham, where we sort of started, or London Bridge, where the first two studios were. They were the kind of areas we were looking at in that kind of band around Southwest. And the only venue we could find that was suitable for the poles was in Vauxhall. And I was like, oh, it's right next to Pole Fit, London. And then we've got like a Aquila on the next stop. So it would have been like three big pole studios all in a row on the same tube line. So I actually run both those ladies because I'm very open and transparent and, you know, don't want there to be any weird conflicts or anything with anyone. I don't think that is helpful for anyone's industry. I don't think, you know, women fighting against women when you're in the same industry is going to be very helpful or productive for your industry. You need to build each other up and work with each other. You know, I think it's really counterproductive. You'll just ruin your own industry. So I wanted to be really open and transparent and do things together and all that. So me and Aquila went for a drink and she was like, yeah, it's cool. She's a cool chick. And then when I spoke to Anna, she was like, well, actually, I want to sell my studio. So I went, well, that works out well, because then we won't have three in a row. It'll just be the two that are already there. So there we go. I bought Pole Fit London.
Nice. And isn't Aquila lovely? I feel like Aquila, especially with her studio, she's created such an individual vibe. I feel like she, just in her own lane.
Like it's so her as well. So like, exactly. It's so her. It's very her character, her style and everything, which is brilliant. Because my style, obviously, mine and Trevor's, is, you know, the ballet dancers, you know, and cabaret and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we want to do shows and things like that. Nice. That's very our thing. She's very, like, the young people, you know, with the marketing. And she's got marketing background, I feel, and, like, lots of social media stuff and all of that, which we're old and not very good at.
Oh, my God, yeah. Do you know what I have to say, like, Aquila, if you're listening to this, I watch, like, because I follow her, I think she's awesome, and she seems very, very nice. I've spoken to her a couple times online.
She's great,
I've not
girl.
Met her yet, but she's great at marketing. So, actually, yeah, she's got marketing background. That now makes so much sense because
I don't know if she has marketing background. She's done a lot of acting and social media stuff, so uh-huh. I feel like she's very good with that type of thing. So I don't know, but you'll have to get her on as well so you can talk to her about that.
Yeah, about her social media, because she's so good at social
media.
Yeah,
she's so good at it. Yeah,
she's really
I'm terrible at it. But well, I've got one idea. I just noticed that I'm doing a lot of product placement for Pret here with my coffee, because I have to have, like, 5 coffees before 10 a.m. So maybe you could get a commission from
Pret, if you would like to
Pret
sponsor
you.
This tiny podcast.
Product placement.
I'll only charge you $10,000. But yeah, no, that'd be amazing. Please call me Pret.
It would be. Love it.
Hey, what's up, everyone? So sorry to interrupt your episode. I just wanted to come on really quickly and tell you a little bit about polols.com. Did you know that we offer international shipping? Well, we've always offered international shipping, but now we're offering it at a much more reasonable price, because shipping from the UK is crazy expensive, so we had to do something about it. So now you can get all of our awesome designs shipped to your home at a much more reasonable price. So why don't you go and check out polols.com today? Because if you want a t-shirt that's got a picture of some pole dancing cats on, maybe some pole dancing dogs, maybe you want a t-shirt that says heels bigger than your dick on it, there's something for everyone. So go and check out polols.com today. Let's get back to the episode.
Love
so
it.
Let's move on. Let's talk about your baby journey. Tell us about
my baby journey.
Beginning. And yes. I mean, are we saying the end of the journey? Have we come to the end of the journey? Are you going to keep trying, or where are we at?
No, I think it's the end. I'll explain. So basically, I I'm pretty old for someone that's going to have a baby. I started trying like 1 month before I turned 39, 2 months before I started. About that. And I did actually get pregnant after 4 months, which is not too bad for trying to get pregnant. However, I lost that baby at 12 weeks. And the reason being because when you're old, like me, they call it a geriatric pregnancy if it's after 35. Isn't that nice? Just wow. To give women more complexes about being geriatric. Old and, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what they call it, after 35. So after 35, your quality of your eggs and your ovaries goes very downhill very quickly. Obviously, everyone's at a different rate, but, yeah, mine have obviously gone down very, very quickly. So there's a much higher risk of, like, abnormalities with the embryos and things like that, and pregnancies, losing pregnancies and things like that. So I unfortunately did experience that, and I know a lot of other women that have had that. So that's, you know, bad enough as it is. But then when you go through IVF thinking that that's going to help, it didn't for me. So I basically started IVF and went through all of these things, like, you know, have these vitamins that'll help your egg quality, have this, have that, do this test, do this experiment. So they like injected, you know, have you ever heard of like PRP, where they take out your blood, they spin it around to get the plasma, and then they inject it back into your injuries?
They can do that
to like regenerate stuff. Well, that's this new experimental treatment that they're doing with ovaries. So to try and regenerate your eggs, because you're born with all your eggs when you're a baby, like you've literally already got them all, you know, and then they just age. So that's the problem. They age with you. Whereas men, you regenerate your sperm like every 3 months, and it's new, fresh. Wait, it doesn't, it's on. Not grown.
So you're telling me when you're born, you've got all of
you're born with like a million eggs. Yep. Inside you. And then each month they just grow. These little follicles grow and one pops out each month.
I did not know that.
See, look, I have learned so much science stuff. Like, I feel like I should, like, now maybe go in a different direction. I've learned so much science stuff because I didn't know that. So that's why egg quality for women, age is such a big factor, where for men it's not a factor because they actually are not born with all of their sperm. It just grows every 3 months. So basically to improve sperm quality, you basically take all the vitamins and do all your health and stuff for 3 to 6 months or whatever, and you can make a really big difference. Whereas women, it's like, well, you're already aged, so they're already 40-year-old, 42-year-old eggs. They've already got a problem. And we'll see, like, it's really hard to improve them. But they did try this experimental treatment, which people have been doing, called ovarian PRP. And they basically inject my plasma into my ovaries to see if it will help to regenerate, because they're hoping that this is like a new thing. Anyway, no, that didn't work either. So I ended up doing that. I've done, tried everything. I've done 15 rounds of IVF, one including IUI. So 15 months of injecting myself every day for a month with all the hormones. Oh. And then like 13 egg retrievals, I think I've done, where they put you under and take the eggs out. I don't get very many eggs because I have terrible ovaries that don't work properly. So tried that a million times. Don't have many. I have a couple of embryos on ice, but they're just the ones that I did try didn't work. So, you know, after 15 rounds, I just in 2 years' time as well, like I did it over about 26 months, I did all these rounds. So pretty much like in a row, do five and then have a month or two off, and then did another set, and then, you know, it's ridiculous. Nobody does that amount, but I kind of like, I went at it like I do with everything. Cause you know me, you know what I'm like, I can do this. Focus. I'm going to make it work. So I like did all of the diets, all of the vitamins, all of the things you're supposed to do. And I thought, yeah, just like ballet. If I just do it, everything you're supposed to, I can make it work. But your ovaries don't respond to that at all.
Right.
Even trying the meditation and the forced meditation and doing, you know, trying to be zen and all this, that doesn't help me. Like, it doesn't help for me. It didn't help me either. So I have decided to not have a baby. Well, because I can't have my own. I can go with donor eggs, so use someone else's eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually have split from my partner this year as well. I think, you know, a lot of stress, obviously.
So we broke up at the beginning of the year when we ended this journey as well. And I've decided, that's when I kind of decided my life needed to go in a different direction. So right. The baby wasn't going to be it for me. And I just needed to find a new purpose so that I could continue on, basically. It was really hard for me to find, I don't know, I guess, I think I felt in a way like I was having this baby maybe because society says you have to do it by this certain age. So I was like trying to fit into this thing. Yeah. I thought that's what I really, really wanted for that time. But actually towards the end, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to be okay in my life if I don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm really, really enjoying my life as it is now, being in London and, you know, having the studio, yeah, doing those things that I really, really love and really make me happy. And, yes, a baby may be in my future. It won't be my own because of my eggs. I can't use my own eggs. But I don't know if I want to go through more injections and stuff, which I'd have to do for a donor egg too, to do a pregnancy where I would carry the baby but it wouldn't have my DNA. Mm-hmm. It's a possibility, but I'm getting older now, so maybe not sensible either. There could be adoption. It depends who I meet, what happens here. But at the moment, I'm quite happy. I've made the decision that it's not happening. So I'm just going to steal everyone's dogs. That's the final.
Are you at peace with it? How do you feel about it? Like,
I am now. It took a long time. Like, I honestly, like, I've cried. I've done therapy. I've done I went to a Buddhist monastery in Australia for like a 3-day thing on my own, just on my own, to stay in this little monastery and do chanting and meditation with monks. I've tried everything, like, to try and find peace for myself. And I did. I don't know what point it was. I don't know if it was just the sheer exhaustion of the injections of the IVF and the stress. Also, it costs a lot of money, but I try not to think about that. Just leave that. Right. Not gonna look at it. I don't know. Yeah, I think maybe the sheer exhaustion as well. Like, I just can't do it anymore. So I do still have two embryos on ice. I'm just going to leave them there in case I change my mind in a couple of years' time. Sure. I don't think I will, but you never know. I'm pretty sure I'm done.
Forgive my ignorance for this. So when you say your embryos, is that your eggs you mean?
No, so eggs, so if someone tells you to freeze your eggs, which if anyone's listening and you're under 35 or maybe you're just 35 or 36 and you haven't done it and you're not sure about whether you want to have children or not and you would like to have a backup plan, go and freeze your eggs. Yes, it's a bit expensive, but trust me, it's much cheaper than 15 rounds of IVF. Go and freeze your eggs because your eggs, when you're younger, will work much better and they will make an embryo. So the embryo is what happens after it fertilizes with the sperm.
Right.
And if you can actually freeze the embryo, it's better than freezing just the egg, because obviously the eggs are smaller and they don't always defrost.
The embryo is like the very first stage of the egg fertilization
process. Right, okay. Exactly. Yep. So they fertilize. I know this is not really up your alley because you don't really care.
This is why I don't really know much about it, because obviously, like, I don't have these eggs. I don't have to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happens is, the egg and the sperm fertilize and, and then create a little embryo, and then it grows into a fetus. And then it's a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes out, Dan, and they go, here's a child, here's a human.
But could you, so could you use that embryo inside a, what's it called, where someone holds the baby for?
A surrogate. A
surrogate.
Yeah. So that's not the problem with me. So surrogacy is usually for people with uterine issues, so where it attaches. So my uterus is fine. It can carry, well, it's, I mean, it's getting old too, but it's similar to, I've got no chance. Like, there's like, I don't have endometriosis, but I have like another one, which is a similar thing that grows into the muscle. But it's not so bad. Like, I could carry. My problem was the egg. So like the ingredients, before you put it in the cake tray, mm-hmm. mine's actually the problem with the ingredient that you're putting in. So my ingredients going into someone else's womb is not going to help the fact that the DNA and that is not going to work anyway.
Right, I see what you
That's mean. What my problem is. So I need someone else's good eggs, and then they could put it in me, probably, and it would be fine.
Right, I see. Okay.
That's how that works.
So,
yeah.
But as well, like, and just, I hope this isn't too much of a personal question, but like, you're saying about these embryos, I assume those embryos are with John's sperm, right? How would you feel about that?
No, God, no. Okay. Well, I really hope that my partner that did this with me is not listening to this.
Oh my God.
So John and I broke up in 2018. I started this journey with the person that I've been with that you wouldn't know. His name is
John.
Matt, and he's no.
What?
I broke up with John in 2018.
But wait, you said the person that you went to Australia and he followed you to Australia. That is the same person, isn't it? We're talking about John, right?
Yeah, that was John.
Okay, fine.
That was John from Expo. yeah, we like lasted like not even a year in Australia, okay. And it was just drama. It's always drama, 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 drama. So we left John in 2018. He's still in Australia somewhere in the countryside. I don't know. Yeah. So I've been with a person called Matt for the longest time. Who's lovely and was Chili's new dad. But yes, so the embryos are with Matt's DNA. So we've got a very amicable relationship after our breakup. We own a house together. We've got a cell. We built a house. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But we're just not meant to be together. And
do you think? I mean, not baby related. This, yeah. But if you mind me asking, we've talked a lot about how old you were and stuff when you started like the whole process and stuff. How old are you actually now?
42.
42. Do you think? Like, because I mean, I'm 35, but I feel like if me and Mitch, right,
you should freeze your eggs, Dan.
If me and Mitch were to break up now, right, I always think like I'm so set in my ways and how I like to live my life and things I like to do. Do you find that makes it really hard to meet people?
Oh, I think I'm better at it now because I actually. Like I've tried online dating twice now in my life. So once like about 10 years ago, I had a short period where I was like, oh, I'm going to do some online dating. And I went out with two people. I don't think I was very good at it then. Like I actually found it quite stressful and it was weird. And I like went out with them once or twice and went, oh, I can't do it. You know, this time I've just gone, like everyone's made me go on like Hinge, I think is the new one for the old people, and Hinge and Bumble.
Right.
This has gone way off track.
I know. This. So if you came here for poll, this just switch off now.
I think my dating.
We've got at least like 10 more minutes on dating here. So,
well, I think as an older woman, I think I'm just much more direct with what I want, and I know what I like. Like literally, I'll have a conversation with someone like two sentences back or forth, and I can straight away tell. No, you're going to be boring. No, you're not going to. Hold my whatever, or I just tell them outright. It's not, there's no game happening. Like it's just, and I'll be much more out there with like what I want and flirt more. I need to. I don't try and hold back or anything. I just, yeah. Oh,
no.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I think you're good.
Playing with these. I'm not very good with the technology because I'm old and on Hinge. Probably why I'm not doing so great at it. Anyway, I am talking to someone on, not right this minute, like during this conversation, but I have been this morning talking to someone that I now have a number going back and forth.
And you think, because you were saying like over the years that like, you've mellowed a little bit, I can definitely tell. I mean, the Justine in London now is very different to the Justine that I saw in Phuket. I'm going to be really honest with you here because I don't want this to come across the wrong way and I hope you're not offended by this, but I was a bit anxious when I first went to Phuket last year because the Justine that you were when you were last in London was not the woman that I fucking met in Phuket. I was like, oh my God, you just, I mean, still so super uber organized, uber business woman. And they're always the parts of you that I love, but you used to get super stressed out and like everything had to be perfectly your way. And now you're just like, so chill. It's such a nice blend, actually. Like, it's a compliment.
I mean, I'm not chill, but I cover it up much better now.
Yeah.
No, I am a lot more chill. I think, in Phuket, so I'd done my 15 rounds of IVF. That will
honestly, change a person. I think living in Australia for 7 years, as opposed to living in London, has also, you know, mellowed me a lot. But definitely, you know, going through the grief of losing a baby and not being at, like being told you are never going to have your own child with your own DNA, if that's something you want, like it, you know, and I did think I wanted that. Having to deal with that just makes everything else pale in comparison.
Right.
And going through those little legal issues, you know, with things like that, like, and learning to deal with it and get through that stress, all of those things I think have happened to me in the last 10 years have made me go, you know what, it's going to be okay. It's not that big a deal. Like some of the things that have happened setting up the studio, you know, we've had like, oh my God, this is not happening. And it's like, we think it's all going to be a disaster. I'm a bit like, it's going to be fine, Trevor. Don't worry. It's all going to be fine. It's, no one's going to die. I literally wrote that the other day, I think, to him. I was like, no one's dying. It's just Paul.
Yeah.
It's fine.
This is the thing. I mean, I don't know what are your thoughts are on the industry now, but this is the thing. Sometimes I do just say to myself, I'm like, it is just Paul. Like people really do get in their feelings about some of the things in the industry nowadays. And I just think, guys, it's just Paul. Like we're just,
yeah. Well, industry. I used to, the girl that you knew before used to be like, everyone has to teach my syllabus and you have to teach it my way. And you have to climb with 2 pointed toes. I mean, I still go in and tell everyone they have to climb with 2 pointed toes and do whatever, but I'm not making everyone in the whole studio teach my way. You can all teach your own way because everyone has value and it doesn't all have to be my way anymore. So I've definitely let go of that. Like it's just Pole, and Pole people do it for different reasons.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. And my way, I mean, it's usually the best way, but it's not always the best way.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think we've just realized over the years that there's so many different ways to, you know, to do different
things. Do everything.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it was never really, it's funny actually, because when it comes to climbing and pointing my back toe, that actually was drilled into me by you. And ever since I've always done that way. And now it's become.
That's because we did that show together, which if anyone's watching and you've not seen me and Dan do a duo, you need to go on YouTube and look for, oh my God, what was it called? It's like The Royal Wedding, Dan Rosen and Justine McLucas. It was a cabaret show we did for Wills and Kate's wedding as part of this like satire cabaret thing. And that's where the night I met Trevor, actually. He was doing like single ladies for one of the drag shows that night, and you and I were doing the poll. I was wearing Stacey's wedding dress. That was hilarious. It's so good. Go and watch it on YouTube.
It's so cringe. Like I look back and I just think, oh, what were we thinking? Like we literally, I think we must have had like three like training sessions together to make this like piece.
I'm pretty sure I was like, climb your pointed toes though.
But
I don't even remember
that.
If I got to that point though. I don't even know if I pointed my toes in those climbs because it wasn't a thing back then. So there's probably, maybe we shouldn't watch it because it's probably the one video I have where I'm not pointing my toes the back toe in my climb.
I know I definitely probably wasn't because back then that was the one thing you used to always berate me about. It was like, point your fucking toes. But yeah, but funny. I just think that the industry, the industry has changed a lot. I mean, what are your thoughts on the industry nowadays? Do you like it more now? Did you like it more back then?
Oh, you know, I have a real nostalgia for the old pole days. I really do. Like it was a really small group of people. We all knew each other and we all hang out all together. I don't know. It felt very, very community based, and we were like, I think we didn't know it at the time, but we did kind of know we were starting something that was new, you know, like pole as something that you could have, you know, as a fitness regime, you know, and go and do your classes every single day, make businesses out of it. I mean, who would have thought you would have businesses for pole, like people selling pole clothes, just pole clothes, that there is enough market and demand to actually just sell pole clothes. Like no one would have thought of that before. I used to sell pole hot pants and I never thought that I would ever be able to sell that many of them. And now there's companies that just do that and they make a great living. So, you know, we were part of that initial industry startup, you know, which was lovely. And I loved all the people from back then. But yes, I was stressed then. So I actually really like how it is now that there's, I feel like the weight of the industry is not really on our shoulders now. We had to always prove to everyone that it was, you know, that we were justified in being on TV when we wanted to be, or we were justified in having our business. Like for HMRC, I had to, you know, submit so many documents to prove that, you know, what my business was, what it was. Constantly having to prove to everyone stuff or explain what it was. And that's okay now. I don't have to do all that. We're sharing the love. There are so many studios. It's so cool. I don't even know all the studios anymore. I used to know everyone. And I guess that means it's not as tight knit. Which is, you know, a little bit,
yeah.
I don't know, what I liked about before. It's not as tight-knit, but I still like that now there it's such a big industry, we can actually make something, you know, you can make a career out of it. It doesn't have to be a little hobby on the side.
Absolutely.
Like there is something there now.
Yeah, I think.
And so I like two bits of it. I like both.
Yeah, I like both, a bit of both too. There's different things about different parts of it I like. I mean, obviously we've got to remember that our businesses that we're running now wouldn't be successful without the growth of the pole industry. You know, it's like instructor
exactly,
training.
Exactly. So I'm right. Really happy of that, course. You know, it's huge and that I don't necessarily know every single person. But I do hope that I can build more of a community back here again, because that's what I loved about my Ecole de Pole that I had in London before. You know, we used to go for, that's going to make me sound terrible now, it's probably why my eggs don't work, going for, you know, sangria on a Saturday afternoon after class and stuff.
Right.
And yeah, so if anyone wants to come and have sangria with me after class, that's my plan.
That's your thing now, sangria after class.
That's my plan. Yeah. Well, we did have we had chili margaritas on Friday night after class.
Oh.
On Friday, you know, little tribute chili margaritas for my chili.
That's
so
cute.
I will continue doing that.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. If anyone would like to come and drink with me after class, that's what I.
That's your thing.
That's my goal now. Just make a little,
just to get dry.
Little crew.
So, hey, what's up, everyone? Sorry to interrupt your podcast. I just wanted to come on and tell you really quickly about one of our sponsors for this podcast, which is Superfly Honey. So tell me, do you want to be Superfly Honey? Well, honey, of course you do. Well, if you want to be Superfly, you need to make sure you get yourself some Superfly Honey grip leggings. Now, Superfly Honey specialize in these grip leggings that you may have seen all over Instagram at the moment. Everybody's wearing them. And these are great for anyone who like to just keep themselves a little bit more covered up. Maybe you're poling in a cold country and you need some extra grip because your skin just isn't giving you the grip you need. Well, Superfly Honey have got you covered with their grip leggings. Now, they told me to give an honest review, and I did have a pair sent to me, and I can tell you the only thing that was sad about them was that the pair they sent me didn't fit me. They were too small and they were too short because I needed their tall range. So if you're like me and you're a tall bitch too, guess what? They've got their own tall range. They obviously just didn't realize that I was a 6 foot glamazon. So they sent me their tall range and now I have one of their tall pairs of leggings and they fit so snug. There's no movement on them. I didn't feel like they were going to cause any friction. They were super tight to the legs, so they felt really comfortable. And for any of you out there who like to stay covered up, these are amazing for you and definitely an option to try out. So go and check out Superfly Honey. So tell me what you think it's like being, you know, a businesswoman, an entrepreneur within pole, because I feel like being a business person within pole, it sometimes comes as a bit of a taboo. Some people, almost like some people don't really understand why people want to make money from our industry. And like, they almost take it as like,
yeah,
I don't know how to explain this. Like, it's almost like what we're doing is really offensive because we're trying to make a living from pole. Like, what's
from people that like looking inside it or
within pole?
Like,
yeah,
from, sorry, looking
like
in from outside or
pole.
From within pole?
Yeah, like people.
They think that you should be giving it away for free.
Right, exactly. It's like almost like.
Yeah, I think, yeah, everyone everywhere doesn't understand. Like, it's a business. I even wrote this to someone the other day, someone that. I'd had trouble with payments. Like, there's a whole business side, right? You have to make payments. We use a payment system. There are fees and charges involved with that. I budget on things. I pay for, you know, activities and things on pole retreats, and someone wanted to cancel their spot. Well, we'd had some issues with this person's late payments and things like that. You know, and the person said, oh, well, you can't take a cancellation fee because, you know, I thought you'd want to keep the relationship good. And I'm like, I don't have a relationship with you. You're not coming to the camp.
this is the business, this is the terms and conditions. It says there's a cancellation fee that covers my, like, you know, the fees and charges that I've had to do, the time, the probably 16 hours of back and forth that I've done all year to try and get the person, you know, to make their payments and on the camp and all these things, all those lovely administrative things. And I'm like, that's what we have a cancellation fee for. It covers all of that bullshit if you decide to cancel your spot.
Right.
And they basically were like wanting to threaten me with all these things. Anyway, and about the relationship. And I was like, my answer just back was, business is business. Mm. This is business. This is the business side of it. These are the terms and conditions. Mm. I will be, you know, I will have a relationship with people, and I will keep that relationship going, but that's a two-way street. And that's, you know, I'm not just going to be lovely to everyone if you're going to take the piss.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every single company in the world, you know, the airlines, everything, they have these terms and conditions because it's a business. They're making money out of it. I want to be able to keep my business sustainable, so I have terms and conditions, and I stick to them now. Like, I might have probably been a bit more emotional with my responses to this sort of stuff, you know, way back when I started, but now I've learned way more, and I've also done a legal services diploma in the middle of this and had a normal job for a little while in Australia as a compliance manager. So I've learned to take the emotion out of all of my responses, and you just go, no, well, this is what it is. End of story. If they don't want to come back, they don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I am comfortable enough that my business will keep going because my product is good and the way I run it is good, and I do keep relationships good, but I also stick to my terms and conditions. If I constantly change those things, you know, and my standards for people, the business is not going to be sustainable. And then your industry, the pole industry that everyone wants to have, they won't be able to have the classes. So right. I don't know why people always want things for free, or they want you to change the terms and conditions just for them.
Mm-hmm.
We can't sustain our businesses if you do that to us.
I think, you know? Like, it's funny because at my studio, like, I feel like I'm really flexible, like, compared to others. Like, I'm pretty flexible with what I offer. But at the end of the day, we are trying to run a business. But people kind of forget that. And I think people think that because they're able to message the owner directly, like, they have a...
Oh, you don't do that. Don't you just lie and say it's admin signing off? That's what I do.
Well, normally, like...
Now I'm giving away all my secrets. You just sign off the administrative team, even though the team is you. Then they don't think they're talking to you directly.
Admin people that do my admin for me. But obviously, okay, when it gets to a point where people are complaining, I have to, you know, sometimes go in and be like, right, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this now because...
Yeah, that's hard.
You know, because people are getting... all personal in the emails, and then I go back and I say, right, listen, I've read this and I've decided this and this. And sometimes I'm like, listen, do you know what? Because sometimes we actually had this a little while ago where a customer was arguing with one of the people who does my admin for me, Joanne, and then I took the email over and I was like, listen, I was like, do you know what? This argument isn't worth having. I was like, I'm just going to refund you, but you're not welcome back. She just couldn't really, I guess she just probably couldn't understand or fathom that I just wouldn't allow someone back to the studio. But it was like,
yeah, no, it,
like,
happened.
I'm sorry, but this is a two-way street. Like, if you can't respect me, then I'm not going to have you in my studio, let alone freaking, you know, have you anywhere near my business. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but, you know, it's really difficult because obviously
people really, really think that they have the right. Customers are not always right. Like, they are, but to the point where they're going to be rude and abusive language or violence, like, I don't care, which, you know, even just abusive language towards someone, that's not acceptable to anyone. You wouldn't talk to a normal person, you know, just face-to-face like that, so don't do it in the emails either. And I feel like, people just think that they can honestly say anything to you and they should be entitled to your services and your products for whatever they want. And they're not. And it's your business. You run it how you want.
And it's that whole thing as well, like, you know when people are like, oh, I missed my class, but I was really ill and I couldn't switch. I'm like, do you think if Amazon, like, if you couldn't, you know, I don't know, cancel your payment or whatever it is, and or Amazon, like, we're going to have to charge you this. Do you think they're going to be like, oh, were you at the hospital? Or, you know, your kids get a babysitter.
Well, the tube. No worries. The tube was really hot. It was really hot, so the tubes weren't working. So I had to get off and, like, walk a bit and then do something else. And now I missed the beginning of my class.
It's like, you know, you wouldn't. But the thing is, what bugs me the most is that people wouldn't even bother messaging Amazon, would they? They wouldn't even bother messaging them because they
wouldn't bother. Exactly. And that's the respect bit that I just don't like. They think they can get away with it with you because you're so much closer, you're accessible.
Yeah, it's intangible, you know? Isn't it? For sure.
Yeah, and they can get to you, but then they try and use emotion. And that's what I mean. So if anyone's listening to this and you're struggling, like maybe in the first year of setting up your business and you're doing all your admin, and it's very hard to, because you do get emotional, you get attached to your students, you become friends with them, your teachers, you become friends with them, things like that. It's very hard because you have those relationships with people, but you have to be able to draw a line and take the emotion out of it. Mm. So, you know, I had someone trying to get out of a cancellation fee for something just yesterday. And they write me a big long thing. Oh, but I've got this going on in my life and this going on and, you know, so much difficult stuff. And I was like, you know, if I was going to be emotional about it, I'd be like, well, dude, I can't have a baby anymore. My dog just died. I could go on and list all my shit. But I'm like, no emotion. This is the business. I'm not going to tell them all that. This is, I'm still managing to do my stuff and keep to my end of my bargain. You keep to yours.
Yeah.
I don't.
You're so, you know, good though. Like, cause I have to say like this, but this, you know what, this is actually, I don't really, for some of the emails, I don't really need someone to do the emails for me. The reason I do it is because otherwise my emotions start to get involved and I start to take it really personally.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, your messaging, like, cause back when it used to be me doing it, people would like be complaining to me and I'm like, you're like complaining to me, and we're, and some of these people I used to be like, you know, I thought we got on really, really well in classes. Like, you almost consider some of these students like not your friends, but like your acquaintances. And then you realize, oh, okay. Oh, we're back to business now. Okay. Because you're not getting your own way now.
Yeah.
Now
it's very hard to judge that. Like most of my close friends are actually pole people, but I'd actually say they're pole people from way before when it was that time that I was saying I was nostalgic about that, the olden days of pole.
Sure.
Now I actually feel like I've got a much better distance. I don't think I will make close friends as much with my students or maybe my instructors as much as I used to, because that was, I was so close to everyone. But that also causes a lot of trouble. Like,
it
is very difficult to separate. So it's actually better from a business perspective. Obviously, if you want to be good friends with your instructors and stuff, that's fine. But you're going to know it's really hard to find that boundary and separate when you actually have to put your business bonnet on.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
and do you know what? If there's any like people thinking of opening a studio, or maybe you've opened a studio recently, one thing, like, it's really important to be friendly with your instructors, like, and I am, like, I get on with all of them. But I, a long time ago, I was actually friends with an instructor, like quite friendly with her. Like, we talk on WhatsApp all the time, like all day, like we were really, really friendly. And basically, long story short, I guess she just got a bit too comfortable, with how friendly what she was with me. I ended up having to fire her for something, and like basically get her to leave. I was like, listen, you're not welcome here anymore. She left me, went to Stacey's, got fired from Stacey's, and I was just like,
This sounds like a her problem, not a you problem,
right,
if there's a pattern,
course,
though.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things, like, you know, that it actually, I remember at the time just being so awful about the whole thing, and then when I heard she'd got fired from Stacey's as well, I was like, oh my god, that actually makes me feel better, because I just was always, it's really hard to not,
it wasn't you,
take it personally.
You weren't the problem on this one.
Yeah,
it is hard to not take it personally, but yeah, what I was saying with the, like, anyone that's starting now, just keep those emotions out of any of your responses. Like, even with Google reviews and stuff, it's hard not to go, oh, but it's my business and it's my personal stuff and I want to tell you everything and get really emotional about it. You can't. You've got to be, thank you for the response, blah, end of story. Because it's just not worth it for your mental health and also for the business. Because the more emotional you get, the more people will, like, rip stuff out of you. The less emotional you are, they got nothing they can take from you.
Right.
People just want to take stuff from you. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm a total bitch and that I have no emotion.
Dead inside.
I definitely do. I'm dead. I am a little dead inside. But I do have emotions. And every now and again, I do get a little emotional. And I will actually say the last 2 weeks with Chili, I probably haven't been as good at my responses as normal. I think I have been getting a little edgy with people because I'm a little like, this is not important. Like, you know, like the things that they're writing to me for. And I've kind of gone, you know what, Trevor, I think you should answer these because I am probably not the best person to answer this right now. I don't want to be emotional. But I'm okay. I'm okay now. I'm back to normal. You can message me, people.
just don't ask me for a cancellation fee.
Where do you get your business?
I won't get it to you.
You know, like business brain from? Like, is there someone in your family?
Oh. Yes, I had to think about this. The last time you asked me, I actually had not really thought about it too much, but once you asked me, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? It's my dad. 100% it's my dad. So when I was a kid, my dad used to go away for work every, like, 2 weeks. He'd fly to Southeast Asia, he'd fly to Lesser, he'd fly, you know, all Germany, everywhere, because he was the director of this massive worldwide shoe machinery company. So they used to sell machines to, like, Reebok and Nike and Adidas and all that. So I always had Reeboks and Nikes as a kid. But yeah, he was like the director of this Southeast Asian part of this company and flying all over the world. So, you know, my dad, I don't think he's ever had a sick day ever in his life. In the 50 years or whatever that he went to work, he never had a sick day. He was like, I don't know, just his work ethic is unbelievable. And he's so organized. He works like me. He's super, like, you know, lists of stuff. Things have to, he loves a spreadsheet. I love a spreadsheet. definitely got the spreadsheet knowledge off my dad. Yeah, just, I think it's my, yeah, definitely my dad has been the one that I got all that from. I don't know where I got the family and the creativity from, because no one in my family, well, I've got some cousins that sing and an auntie that used to paint. So maybe that side, maybe just skipped my dad, because he's not an artistic type and my mum's not artistic in that way. So I don't know where the ballet came from.
I think that's nice. I think, do you feel like ballet is where you get your sort of like discipline when it comes to things like business, your training and stuff? Do you think that all comes from ballet?
Yeah, definitely. Like, the whole like push, do it properly, do it correctly, do it exactly right. Yeah, definitely from ballet. But I think also the ballet, because I was also in a ballet contemporary, like it was a company that was a contemporary company as well. Very, very creative sort of side to that as well. So I think my friend's always having a little bit of a left brain, right brain kind of fight. It doesn't know which one. So that's why pole business works really well for me. I get to be creative and artistic. At the same time, I get to be super business and play with spreadsheets.
And have you got any, like,
my perfect little life.
Have you got any business projects that you can't dedicate time to now that you'd love to one day be able to really plunge yourself into?
Well, one that I always wanted to have, which we've just actually acquired as well, is the production company. With the studio, we've actually got the production company. So years ago, I was actually booking acts and booking, like, my own stuff on the side to do shows and stuff throughout London. Like, you know, I danced in Café de Paris in cabarets and stuff, and I was, going to do little bookings and stuff. And I started to do it, but it was just something I didn't have the time to really dedicate to. So now that there's two of us and we've acquired this little production company, Box In Productions, we are putting on a show next month. So, it's stressful. And I feel like I don't have enough time to also do this and set up a studio again, but I have Trevor. We have each other. So hopefully we will make this work this time.
So it's actually producing shows, this. I thought it was like an agency that was booking people for events.
Well, we are going to do that as well, but we're actually putting on a show first. And we would like it to not be just your typical agency that books people for, you know, to perform here or there, but if they book our whole show. So we would be able to supply all the acts for the evening and the MC, you know, like, as a whole thing. Like, that's what we really want it to be. It's going to take some time. Sure. We need to get that, you know, but we are going to do that for our first one in our own venue in Stockwell next month, which is, this month. Oh my God. It's in like 3 weeks. 29th of September is our first one. Yeah. And we've got some guests. So Hannah Rose is going to do a poll act. We've got, Sam King's going to make a comeback from retirement. I forced him. He's going to do an aerial pole show. And we have an amazing guest from Australia. We've got Blue Phoenix doing an act as well. And there's a whole bunch of burlesque and fire contortion and stuff like that. You know, and we're making a big, huge night of it. And if we can make this work like this, I want to be able to, like, package this to, yeah. But my business brain has, like, been doing the budgets with this, and I still need to fine-tune it to make it work.
Yeah, well, but that'll come in time. You've only really just taken over this business anyway, haven't you? Like,
we started on 6 weeks we've had the studio, and
right.
open now.
It's just been like a whirlwind ever since.
It is such a whirlwind. And then I still got to do the retreats and stuff. I'm going to go home and sell my house and then come back here and put on a production.
Yeah. This is the thing. Like, do you ever listen to like what you just said and think, where the fuck would you have fit a baby into all of this?
Yes. I literally was just thinking out as I said it. I was going to say it out loud and be like, yeah, so you have no room for a baby. But it's so true. Like, I think keeping myself busy and doing these things, which I like doing, if I hated doing lots of things and it was something I didn't want to do, like, some people don't like working that much. They don't want to do loads and loads of stuff. They're like, no, that's not really what I want to do. I want to be able to, like, you know, sit at home and, I don't know, do something else small, maybe 3 days a week, and they want to really spend like 3 days or 4 days a week with their children and do that, and that would be their perfect ideal life. Mine would be, where would I put the baby? Because I like all this other stuff. So actually, it's probably working out just the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. I'm a massive believer in, like, you know, manifestation and, you know, things that happen are happening for a reason, and like
for
even
a reason.
Sad things, like even sad things. That's what.
Well, yeah. You know, someone said to me the other day, which I don't even know if I should be putting this out there, but I'm just going to tell you anyway. So about that, they think that, so the only reason I was really going to go and live half and half in Australia and here is because I can't bring Tilly back. She's too old. You can't put her on a plane again. And so she's in Australia. So I was kind of like, well, I have to go home for my baby because she is my baby and then come back. So I was going to just live in half and half. Someone said to me, they think that Tilly, I'm going to cry now. Tilly maybe knew that and decided to go be free, mum.
Yeah.
Go back to London. You don't need to come home.
Right. Oh, God, that makes me a little bit emotional thinking about that too. Oh, I don't know what it is with, like, dogs or animals. Like, that sounds really terrible. I always tell my friends, it's like, I could literally watch a child be hit by a car and I probably would feel emotionless. But if I watched a dog get hit by a car, oh, my God, I'd break down if it was a dog. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
I can't handle it. Yeah. I watch TV shows where they kill children and stuff all the time, or people just in general, you know, watching lots of crime shows. But if there's ever a dog in it, or any videos where there's dogs being abused or anything like that, I can't handle it.
No, you know, like sometimes when people share these horrible videos on Facebook and you see it and you're like, what is this? And you're like, oh, it's like an animal abuse awareness video. And I'm like, I understand the meaning behind it.
I need a trigger warning for those. I really do.
Right. Yeah, because, like, yeah, that, and do you know what? It's funny because trigger warnings, sometimes I'm always a bit like, oh, do we need a trigger warning for that? But for stuff like that, if it said, like, animal abuse, I'd be like, oh, my God, but go.
Maybe at the beginning of mine, you might want to put a trigger warning about the loss of
Yeah. Great idea, actually.
Just gonna...
I will do that. No, I think it's like, I agree, though. Little things like that, you know, it's like when people pass and stuff and you sort of think, like, it's all happened for a reason. And, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I hate to think of it like that, but I wish she'd just waited 5 weeks because then I could have been there with her when she passed. Right. But I can't feel guilty. No. I mean, I do. I already feel guilty. I'm trying not to.
But the thing is, why would you feel guilty about not being with her?
Just because I wasn't there.
Yeah, of course, but you spent the last 12 years with her, constant. Do you know what I mean?
14.
I've had it
since she was 10 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that whole thing of like, yeah, of course. Like, it would have been way more ideal, but, you know,
nothing ever works out the way you want it to,
really funny. I remember I didn't actually make it to my granddad's funeral, and my dad said to me, like, because I was working at the time, I made it to the second part of the day. I had to work in the morning, and my dad was saying to me, he was like, you know, he ain't gonna know that you're not there, but also it's like he wouldn't have wanted you to be there because he wants you to carry on with your life. And it's little things like that. I feel like with the Chilly thing as well, with all these things, I even said to, like, Mitch the other day, I was like, I hope when I die that people don't freaking come back from holidays and stuff for me, because I'm gonna be dead anyway.
Okay, I'm off the hook
right.
then.
But do you know what I mean? It's like, I wouldn't want that. I really wouldn't want that. And it's like, as well, like, you know how funerals are, like, so miserable. I've said as well, I said to, because I went to a funeral, it was my stepmom, she's Jamaican, and apparently in the Jamaican culture, like, funerals are treated more as like a celebration. And we had this, it was like a party. I loved it. I was like, oh my God, this is what
That's
I want.
That's a great idea.
That was what I want. Yeah, you know,
I want a
it was
party.
So respectful. There was this really nice like projection video at the beginning, like a memorial. It was beautiful. And then everyone like had all this beautiful Jamaican food. We had music. People were just talking. Don't get me
That's
wrong.
That's so cool.
It was like a rave. But it was just nice. It was.
Oh no, I want a rave. I want everyone to like be having massive like speakers. And there's going to be a DJ. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Oh God. Do you know what?
It's going to be like a festival for my one. That would be a perfect way to a send off for me, I think.
I don't know how we transitioned to here. This conversation is just
intense. We've really gone off tangent now. Yeah.
I think
now
this has been the most random podcast I've ever done in terms of we've been talking about babies and next minute
we're
talking
about. I do pole. I do actually pole dance. It was really funny, actually, when I did a class here before it changed the name, I went to like someone's class, I think it was Alex's heels class, which is not very good at heels, so maybe that was why these days. I mean, the heels that I started in were like 6 inches. No. But I was doing Alex's heels class, and someone asked me something, and I went, oh, so do you pole? And I was like, do I pole? Oh. Yes.
since
before you were born, my darling.
Yeah, while you were in school, yeah. I was just learning, yeah.
Yeah, really funny. So yeah, I was just thinking, my God, I am old. But yes, as far as this podcast goes, this is supposed to be about pole, but today it's been about IVF.
Yeah, but you know what? It's about, it's not just about the pole. Like, I mean, I find like pole, I'm at a stage where it's like, well, we all know about pole. I want to know about people and their lives and stuff. So I think it's really nice. And thank you for opening up about that side of your life because it's personal, you know? So the fact that you're willing to is really lovely of you. But before
we. Yeah, well, I'm hoping that, yeah, if there's anyone that's listening and they have more questions about freezing your eggs or any of that process because you're worried about it, maybe you don't want to have children and you know for 100%, that's fine. Like if I had frozen them and then it would have worked, would I then be going, oh shit, actually maybe it wasn't right for me to have a child, like I don't know. So maybe it just worked out fine for me that I didn't freeze them and I didn't have that opportunity. But you know, if you're not sure, freeze them, do what your doctor says. I know the geriatric label is horrible for women, you shouldn't use that, we've got to come up with a better term. But ask for AMH testing. If anyone has any questions about any of that scientific stuff, you're welcome to message
slip
me.
Slip into the DMs. Anytime. Well, that actually leads me on to what I was just about to say. I want you to just give us where can we find you? How can people get in contact with you? How can they find out about your instructor training, your camps? Go, tell us.
And if I don't want to talk to you, you'll know because I will have signed off as administrative team.
Yeah, you've totally outed yourself now. You're going to reply to people's emails and they're going to be like, I know it's you, Justine.
I know it's you, Justine. Answer me. Give me some emotion. Don't be such a bitch. All the camps and stuff you can find on ecoldepole.com.au. Obviously, the London stuff, we've got some instructor training coming up as well. Here, so that's ecoldepole.co.uk. If you go to any of those websites, you'll be able to find the other one through the links. So either one of those websites, the UK one or the Australian one, are probably the best ones if you want to get some information on the camps or the instructor training or the classes. You can message me on Insta under my real name, which I wish I had the knowledge to get a really cool stage name, but back in the day we all just used our real names. So now all these people, I know you
Blue
and me,
Phoenix.
Like yeah, Daniel Rosen.
Why didn't I think of that?
They have such cool stage names. Australians had it down pat in the beginning though. They all had their awesome stage names. And then, you know, I was like, oh, I didn't know that you just don't use your real name. Anyway, so mine's my real name. Super boring. I'm not going to really call it. Like, the supernova. Like, she even came up with, like, a whole entire Insta handle. Oh, anyway, my cousin actually has the best one. What is it? Good thanks, not bad yourself. That's the Insta handle. How good's that? For an Insta handle and very Australian. Sorry. Just had to throw that one in there. It's my favorite Insta handle. Yeah, so Justine McLucas or the Ecoldepole instas. You may get Trevor. You don't know. You may not get me. It may not be me answering you. So don't push it.
We know it's you.
Don't.
We're on to you now.
Don't push it.
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for being so open for having me, Dan. Talking about such personal stuff. I'm sure people will really appreciate that, and I will be sure.
It's a bit therapeutic. It is. I only cried once.
Exactly. You did so good. And I will put a trigger warning at the beginning of this. Thank you for reminding me of that. That's actually
yeah, really I think point. So.
I'm going to do yeah. that. But yeah, thank you so much, yeah. and I hope to see you soon. I hope You're maybe welcome. Before, but if not, I'll see you thank in Thailand.
See you in Phuket.
Bye.
Woo. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Really hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you go and check out all of our awesome sponsors, and I'll see you on the next podcast. Bye.
That was all the tea that you can get this week. Join me next time right here. It's the Weekly Tea.